know how many times I've put that microphone on without forgetting, and tonight I forgot. Turn, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We're going to use the first part of 1 Corinthians chapter 10 tonight as a text for our study together. We appreciate your presence. We have visitors, and we're certainly happy that you're here. It's encouraging to us for you to be here with us, and we invite you back anytime you have the opportunity. Lots of things going on, lots of things winding up, things beginning for the church here. And again, my admonition to you is to continue in the path that you've begun and look to these changes as things that are positive for this group that will help us and strive to make us better. And so with those things in mind, may you look ahead to the days that are before us and do so with eagerness and with energy as we consider the changes that lie ahead for those of us who are sitting in this audience tonight. As you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it's interesting as you look, what we're going to look at is about the first 13 verses of this chapter. You see just some very powerful things said as Jesus, or as Paul rather, writes to the church at Corinth and points back to things that happened long, long before he is writing this to use them as examples for them. And ultimately, as we see the examples that are there for them, we see examples there for us. And hopefully, as we study these things tonight, as Paul warned the church at Corinth, so may we be warned and admonished as we consider the things that he wrote to a church that obviously needed these things, as we consider so many of the things that are contained within the letter that is here. And so as we begin to look at this, and we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and we begin reading with verse 1, and we'll read down through verse 4 as we begin together, one of the things that we see Paul establish very quickly is the idea that Israel, the Israelites, had a relationship with God. As you look at chapter 10 and begin in verse 1, he says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." He is establishing the fact right off the bat that the Israelites, their fathers, as he wrote to them, found themselves in a relationship with God. It's interesting as he talks about some of these things, it's the idea that they had followed the cloud out of Egypt. And you remember as they came out and they made their way into the wilderness, that as they were following the cloud in the day and the pillar of fire at night, so that God was leading them and they were following him. Talks about the Red Sea and how they passed through the Red Sea on dry ground. And involved in that was a symbolic baptism into the leadership of Moses and the things that would take place as Moses led them as they went from that point. He points out that they ate the same spiritual food. It's the idea that God provided for them as they journeyed through the wilderness. We think about the manna that was given to Israel. And as they came through the wilderness, they had just what they needed. Nothing more, nothing less, just what was needed for the situation that they found themselves in. It was God providing these things for them in the relationship that they had with him. It talks about drinking from the same spiritual drink. And you think about the rock that was split apart as the water came forth from the rock as God had instructed that it would. And they drank of that, miraculously provided. Together they partook of that rock which was Jesus Christ. It's the idea that they were serving God. And such is for us, the fact that Israel was in a relationship with God. And what a God. And they had all the blessings of God. And they had God with them and God leading them and God providing for them and God protecting them. And you think about that relationship they saw in regards to the power of God in the relationship that they had with him. And Paul brought that out in a variety of ways as we listen to those first four verses. But then we go to verse 5, please. "For their bodies were scattered in the wilderness." So we come on down and we begin to see that even though they had a relationship with God, even though they found themselves provided for by God, and so that as we come through the course of time, their actions led them to a point where God was not pleased with them. He was not accepting the things that they offered to him. And the text says they were scattered in the wilderness. Most of them never found their way to the promised land. We know of two who did, Joshua and Caleb. But besides that, all of the Israelites who found themselves partaking of this relationship with God as they came through the course of the wilderness wanderings to a man, they died in the wilderness. As you begin to think about that, what he had done for them and their participation in this relationship with him, yet he was displeased. And so as we begin to consider this, we have to come to understand that they did not obey God. He guided them. He brought them down very quickly from something where he had provided for them in their life to a point where, as a result of their actions, as they rejected him and the things that he had instructed, he cuts them off. And as a result of that, they failed to enter the land of promise. As we begin to look at this, the question has to be asked, what happened? What could have possibly happened to a group of people who found themselves in a relationship with God where everything seemed to be so grand, and yet somehow over the course of time, we see that God was displeased with them to a point where he was unwilling to allow them to partake of the ultimate joy that he had promised to them in regards to the land of Canaan? What happened? Paul does not leave us wondering. As we consider the idea of what happened, several things are pointed out. Things where Israel failed. And ultimately, there are dangers there for us as well, as we will discuss as we go through the course of this point. As you begin in verse 6, first thing he says is that they lusted after evil things. He talks about verse 5, most of them God were not well pleased. Their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now, these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. As you turn over to Numbers chapter 11, mark your place. Don't fail to mark your place in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We'll be turning back there in just a minute. But turn with me, if you would, to Numbers chapter 11. And what we begin to see is just some things as we go through the book of Numbers that pointed it out to the church at Corinth. In Numbers chapter 11 and verse 4, we see a situation where the people complain about the meat. And they think back to the land of Egypt and all of the things that they had, and they're just fussing and complaining about the fact that they don't have meat. So God takes care of that problem for them, and we see them then abusing what God had provided. In Numbers chapter 11, in verse 4, it says, "Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense cravings. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, 'Who will give us meat to eat?' And then God provided the quail." And you remember the massive quantities of quail. And the people are just out there and they're eating this raw meat, basically, not considering at all the things that needed to be done by way of preparation. As you go to verse 33, it says, "But while the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was aroused against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very great plague. So he called the name of that place Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they burned the people who had yielded to craving." Think about what is happening here. Here is Israel, and they have this desire for meat, and they miss all of the things of Egypt, and they're longing for the things of Egypt, and they were lusting after these things, and that's what we want. And God provides them with that meat to eat. But instead of partaking of it in the way that would have been appropriate, the people just go out and they're just so consumed with their lust for this meat that has now been placed before them that they don't even bother to cook it. You can just imagine, it says, as the meat was between their teeth, God destroys them in a moment as he takes care of the fact that these people were absolutely demonstrating characteristics that should not have been displayed by his people. Israel gives in to cravings. They lusted after evil things. They found themselves in a situation where they were giving in to their lust, their desire for these things that they missed so much, and failed to truly appreciate the blessings that God had given them. Turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The second thing that he points out, as you read with me verse 7, he points out the fact that Israel gave themselves over to idolatry. In verse 7 he says, "And do not become idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." As you turn to the book of Exodus, I want you to go to chapter 32. In Exodus chapter 32, we see the event reference that is mentioned here by Paul as he writes to the church at Corinth. In Exodus chapter 32, we'll begin reading in verse 4. We'll read down through verse 6. As you remember, Israel has left Egypt. And as they come down through the wilderness, they come to Mount Sinai, where the law is going to be given. And you remember the scene as Moses goes up on the mountain. And Moses is gone for some period of time. And apparently the Israelites grew fairly restless at this point, and so they decided they needed something to do, so they decided they would build themselves an altar that they could worship, a golden calf that could serve basically as a god for them. In Exodus chapter 32, as you read with me beginning in verse 4, talking about Aaron, it says, "And he received the gold from their hand, And he fashioned it with an engraving tool, and he made a molded calf. Then he said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast of the Lord." Then they rose up early on the next day, offering burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Here is Israel. Just a short time after they have departed from the land of Egypt, and they have seen the power of God bestowed upon them in such an incredible sort of a way, and they come to Mount Sinai, and the one who has led them, the one into whose leadership in some ways they were baptized, as you think back to the things that Paul said, and he's gone to receive the law. And in just a short period of time, the people have collected all their gold and silver and have poured it in and melted it, and they're fashioning a golden calf, and they're bowing down and worshiping this golden calf and engaging in activity that was absolutely inappropriate, sinful, in regards to the things that a Christian ought to be doing. Or a child of God, one of God's people. As you begin to think about those things, what happened to Israel? They yielded to temptation. They gave over to things that they were desiring to do. And as they begin to see these things, idolatry, not only here, but as you go through the course of time, and as they came down to the land of Canaan and ultimately entered in, and they failed to annihilate the gods of the land, and we find as they gave themselves over, and ultimately it seems that idolatry, worshiping of other gods, was something that found themselves consumed with and led to their rejection by the God of heaven and earth. As you begin to think about these things, and Paul continues, go back to chapter 10 and look with me at verse 8. He talks about the evil things after which they lusted. He talks about the idolatry. As you consider chapter or verse 8 of chapter 10, he talks about the fornication that they committed. In chapter or verse 8, he continues, he says, "Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 fell." Again, as you look at this, turn back to the book of Numbers, this time to chapter 25. In Numbers chapter 25, we see this scene laid out for us. In Numbers chapter 25, as you look at verse 1, we see where the children of Israel engaged in this kind of an activity. Still in Exodus. In Numbers 25, verse 1, it says, "Now Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal of Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel." And so we see here the beginning of this engaging in fornication with the women of the land and with those with whom they should not have been engaging in such activity. And as you go down again through the course of time, we watch as Israel on occasion after occasion after occasion finds themselves giving their sons to the daughters of the land and engaging in fornication, in this particular case, seemingly in worship to the idols of the land of that day or of that time. And we look as we see God witness this event. He is absolutely displeased. And in one day, 23,000 are killed as punishment for the sin that they had committed. As you go back and reread verse 9 of chapter 10 of the book of 1 Corinthians, he talks about the fact that they tempted Christ. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 9, he says, "Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed by serpents." Again, as you look at the book of Numbers, as you turn this time to chapter 21, we see where Israel gave themselves to this activity. In Numbers chapter 21, as you look with me beginning in verse 4, in Numbers 21 verse 4, it says, "Then they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses, 'Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread.' So the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, 'We have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us.' So Moses prayed for the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, make a fiery serpent and set it on a pole, and it shall be that everyone who is bitten, when he looks on it, shall live. So Moses made the bronze serpent, put it on a pole, and so it was, if a serpent had bitten anyone, when he looked at the bronze serpent, he lived. Think about Israel's situation. They find themselves out here in the wilderness. They're 100% dependent on God to provide. They had no food supply. They had no water supply. They had no provision for their clothes or for their necessities as they journey by the way. And here they come, and they look at the things that God has given them, and instead of being thankful to him, they absolutely stand in rebellion and rejection to the things that we can't stand this worthless bread. It was that worthless bread that was sustaining their life. But they were unwilling to accept the blessings of God as he gave them to them. Instead, they were looking at all of the things that they felt like they were lacking, and in doing so, it's interesting that the point that Paul makes is that they tempted Christ. Over and over again, as Israel was journeying through the wilderness on their way to the promised land, when they came to a point of hardship or a point of difficulty, instead of looking at their own actions and the things that they needed to correct, they would look and blame God. And they would blame him for not having all of the things that they felt they needed. And they would blame him for the situation that they found themselves in. Or they would go after Moses, and they would deal with Moses. And God became more and more tired with their activities. And as you begin to think about this particular situation, they tried the Lord. They tried the Lord mightily by their absolute rejection of what he had provided for them. And we see as God sent those fiery serpents as punishment, killing numbers and numbers of the Israelites who were rejecting him and tempting, as Paul says, Christ. As you go back and you look at chapter 10, and this time we read verse 10, he talks about the fact that they were murmurers or complainers. At 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, he continues, nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. This references to Numbers chapter 16. As you look at Numbers chapter 16, and we begin reading in verse 1, we see a rebellion against Moses. And we see the reaction of those, or the things that happened to those who led this rebellion. In chapter 16 of the book of Numbers, beginning in verse 1, now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? So they get this band together, and we've heard their murmuring before, but this time they're going to murmur against Moses and Aaron and seek to overthrow basically their power, at least take some of it away. God stands in absolute rejection of this. And he sends a plague, and if you look at verse 49, it says, now those who died in the plague were 14,700 besides those who died in the Korah incident. God dealt with them harshly as a result of their failure to acknowledge him and those whom he had put in place to lead them to the land of promise. And so we begin to look at these things. What happened to Israel? Well, they lusted after evil things. They found themselves given over to idolatry. They found themselves in a situation where they began to commit fornication with the women of the land. They tempted Christ. They were given to murmuring and complaining about the situation in which they found themselves, even though as you examine that situation, they were truly blessed by God in a very, very powerful way. As we look at this, Paul does not leave us wondering what the application of these events is. As you turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and we'll continue there, he points out the fact, as he did at the beginning, and you look with me at verse 11 this time, we'll read verses 11 and 12, as you look at verse 6, he says, these things became our examples. Now as you read down verse 11, now all of these happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. The bottom line is this, as we consider the application of these events. The application is that these are examples for us. As we begin to consider the nation of Israel, and we consider them as they journeyed through, God revealed His will to them. He had a plan for them by which He would lead them to the land of promise. He had accepted them as His people, those who would be His specially selected nation of all the nations of the world to be His. And as they rejected Him, we see His strong reaction and punishment that He brought as a result of their disobedience. And so the application that is made to us is, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. The danger is that as we progress through our Canaan, or through our journey through the wilderness on our way to spiritual Canaan, that we find ourselves in a situation where we look at what we have and what God has provided, and we realize that He has given us so much. But if we ever found ourselves in a situation where we basically reject the things that He has given us, and we fail to truly appreciate all that has been done. And as we begin to think about that, we can become, as they were, very arrogant in our relationship with God. To a point that as we begin to look at Him and we begin to consider who we are in relationship to Him, we fail to realize the humility and the things that we must show before Him. And instead, we become very proud and we think we stand. And we think we have solid footing. When in reality, we may be falling prey to the very things that will separate us from Him. And so as we look at the dangers that were before them, may we realize the imminent dangers that are before us. As we consider the pattern of Israel and the things that they fell into, those are the very things that we can fall into. We can find ourselves in situations where we are lusting after evil things. And we have such a desire to be involved in things that are not right that we find ourselves doing it anyway, even though we know it's not what God would have us to do or what He would have for His people to be. Idolatry. We look at that and we picture idolatry as we consider the nation of Israel as the golden calf or some idol that is placed before them that they bow down to and so forth. And while we would not find ourselves with the idol placed on the mantle, as it were, we find ourselves with things that we bow down to from time to time, that we give greater attention to than we give to our relationship with God. It may be our job. It may be our recreation. It may be our family. It may be things that we are putting in front of our service to God that ultimately, as God looks at that, while it's not set up in some sort of a physical location, as He begins to consider our relationship with Him, He says, you have basically placed that before me. And in doing so, we have established an idol among ourselves. And we must be careful that in our priorities and in the things that we do, and the priorities that we set, that we set God as the top priority, and everything else falls underneath. Because if we fail to put Him first, in many ways we have committed the same sin against Him that Israel committed as they went to idols and served them. Fornication is such a tremendous temptation in this day and time. The absolutely unbelievable thing about this idea of sexual immorality is that it's becoming a more and more accepted practice among those who are a part of this country and really a part of the world in so many ways. No longer is there a stigma associated with a person who cheats on his wife or a woman who cheats on her husband. It's becoming more and more accepted. And we almost look at that as a sort of activity where it's a sense of power associated with it. If we can find ourselves that we can convince one to engage in these kind of activities with us, that it's almost a notch in our belt, so to speak. And you know that God is looking at these things in absolute horror. And as we begin to consider ourselves and we consider the relationships that we have, we must be careful. Because we can find ourselves in situations where we allow our relationship with a member of the opposite sex to become so close and so intimate that these kind of temptations are placed before us. And as we consider the workplace, where more and more women are very prevalent in the workplace, to a point where it's almost a 50-50 proposition. And on occasion, we may find ourselves having to work very closely with one who is a member of the opposite sex. How do we handle that relationship? Do we allow ourselves to become so close to them that we begin to think thoughts along these lines of a relationship that is certainly inappropriate, sinful? Or do we make sure that we build the walls that are not going to allow those types of emotions and feelings to come into that relationship? We must be careful in our relationships with each other, as we have talked about on numerous occasions. We can find ourselves becoming so close with another couple that those relationships begin to break down, and we find ourselves thinking thoughts and perhaps over the course of time engaging in actions that are absolutely wrong. We look at Israel and we shake our heads because we can't believe that as the power of God was being witnessed all around them, that they would depart from Him. But what happened was they gave in to temptation. They succumbed to temptation. And instead of looking to God as the source of strength and power, instead they gave themselves over to these base desires and submitted themselves to that instead of submitting themselves to Him. We can do the same thing. And so may we be careful. May those of us who have already entered into the marriage relationship be careful, and may those of us who have not be careful as well. The only time that a sexual relationship is appropriate is in the bond of marriage. And for those here who have not entered into that bond at this point, may you realize the dangers and the pitfalls that are there for you as a child of God. May you realize that temptation will be presented to you, and it will be presented in a very appealing fashion. As you begin to consider the relationship that you may have with one that you're dating, one that you're growing very close to, you must be very cautious not to allow those walls to break down so that that intimate relationship develops to a point where fornication is the end result. It's difficult to hold those feelings down, but to be what God desires for us to be, we must. And it's never more difficult than when we are young. And so the very best thing that you can do is establish right off the bat with whoever that special someone is, establish immediately that those are not things in which you will participate. That you live by a higher standard than the standard that the world has set. That you intend to save yourself for a time when you can fulfill those desires in the appropriate way, in the bond of marriage. I guarantee you, if you do that, you will be glad you did. If you don't, not only have you sinned, but you put yourself in such a vulnerable position as you consider your life that is ahead. And so may we not fall into the same temptation that Israel did, as they fell into the temptation of fornication. Tempting Christ, I think it's easy for us at times to not truly be appreciative of what's been done. And we think about them as they reacted to those things. May we not do the same. May we realize the rich blessings of being a child of God. And then may we pattern our lives as He would have us to, so that we grow to our full maturity in the kingdom of God. It is then that we will be pleasing to Him. Murmur. This, I think, is especially difficult for so many of us as we sit here. Things don't seem to be going exactly the way we want them to, and so we fuss about it. We look at our lives, and the pattern of our lives is not going exactly the way we had laid out, and so we complain about it. Perhaps even to the point where we look at God and say, how could He let this happen to me? Or why did this happen to me? Or somehow blame things on Him that were no blame. Those are things that we must avoid in the very best way that we possibly can. We look at verse 13. In verse 12, He has just said, therefore let him who thinks he stands, lest he fall. A person can think that they are doing exactly right and that they are standing, but we're all in danger, and may we not fail. We'll also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. finding themselves overcome. But what God has promised this, we must understand this. And we must make this application to ourselves and what He wants us to be. And the way of escape that He will provide. And the way that He has provided, and realize that He will give us the way out. And as we consider our own lives, what a difference it will make for us to correct that situation. The blessings of being in Jesus Christ tends to be washed away. The invitation is there for you tonight to do that very thing and to leave. And may we, when we do fall to temptations like we have discussed tonight, invitation of Jesus Christ. And if you do, we hope you'll come as we stand up and as we sing.